Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSN Podcast, the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. And, you know, it's Monday, Lunatic Mondays, we're going to have fun, anything can happen, et cetera, et cetera. Tonight I have a guest that, oh my God, I know we're going to have so much fun because we had our pre-interview and, oh my God, we were on for like an hour and time just went by like 2 minutes. And I love when I connect with witches like that, with you know, other pagans, because, yeah, they're amazing. So in case you don't know her, I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. Her name is JB Della. She has studied magic and spirituality from around the world for more than 20 years. As a practitioner of healing arts, she leads workshops and ritual retreats on earth-based spirituality at the North California Women's Herbal Symposium. Jamie is the author of 8 books, including the Wicca Herbal and the Wicca Cookbook, and writes the Herbal Journeys column in Witches of Vegas magazine. Several of her essays and articles have also been featured in online and print publications such as Southwestern American Literary Journal, Sage Woman Magazine, Revel Society, and The Manifest Station. And I am very she's my friend. Hello, JB. How are you tonight? Can you
Hello. Thank you so much for having me here.
Sunny California, how is the weather? Because I'm freezing here in Chicago.
Well, you remember, I'm in the mountains, so it was snowing earlier. It's not so sunny.
Well, that sucks. But, you know, it's probably, I bet you, I don't know. Probably not as cold as here. You know, here, Chicago is just terrible. You say you live in Chicago for a little while, right?
Yes, I lived, oh my gosh, in the Gold Coast. So we were there actually when the Chicago Bulls won and they tipped over the taxi and people were running around naked. And I thought, wow, one basketball game. Look what happened.
Well, that's the magic of this city. The city that is has the lake on the wrong side, you know, the water is on the east and the land is on the west, and then we are all over the place. We're here in Chicago. But anyway, JB, it was so much fun to get to meet you and to get to know you a little bit better when we were doing the pre-interview. And
we had a good time.
I have such a good time, and I want my listeners to have such a good time as well. And I want to give a shout out, of course, to the maker of the magic, Selena Fox, because it was her who suggested that I did the interview. She must have seen something that she knew we were
yes.
just going to click. You know,
yes.
So
I love
thank
that.
You.
Nice of her.
Yeah, and you know, she's amazing, and she's looking out for me constantly, you know, like, hey, why don't you do this, why don't you do that, and I'm very thankful that she suggested you, and we're all going to be talking all over the place about your beautiful book. I'm biased because the book cover is blue and gold, and these are my colors, but we're going to be talking about the Book of Spells, The Magic of Witchcraft, beautiful book, and a hardcover, I love it. We really got to be talking about all your books and all the things that you've been doing in life. But I have to ask you what I ask all my guests, because everybody's journey and everybody's story is unique. How did you get into witchcraft, Wicca, paganism, etc.?
Well, I think I always say it started literally at the beginning. My mother's mother died the month before I was born. And so she instantly became an angel. She instantly became my guardian angel. Her name was Della. I took on Della as my middle name, and I recently made it my last name. But what that meant was having a grandmother Coco. If anyone has seen the movie lately, you know that in the Mexican tradition, we celebrate those who have crossed to the other side. We speak with them. We have an ofrenda, an altar for them. We aren't afraid of the other side. So the first step in my path to paganism and witchcraft began with having a grandmother who was a spirit whom I spoke with often. So there was no, from that, I was able to easily extend my understanding to animism, to the idea that life lives in all things, to the concept that there are parallel universes, whether you call that the elemental energy in trees and rivers and flowers, or life on other planets, or even the time continuum that can fold in and on itself. And coupled with being raised on a land in Orange County where my family had lived at least for 250 years, and beginning to have that sensation that I was experiencing my ancestors' DNA memories to my own DNA, that I would be in a place and it would feel so familiar, and I would have flashbacks to my grandparents, my mother's 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 life. So that was a big point for me. And then another aspect is another grandmother was a tarot reader. So from the time that I was so little, I learned that there are messages and symbols, that numbers mean something, that the king, the queen, that these archetypes are existing and out there and helping us and guiding us and protecting and pushing us in the right direction, or pushing us away from certain things, or even sometimes giving us warning. And if we don't heed their advice, watching us fall, you know. And so that was a really big thing to have tarot around for my whole life. I mean, my Nana Maine, she was crazy. She was from the South, and she drove a Mercedes, a big white Mercedes, and she had a lead foot. She'd get pulled over, and she was from Birmingham. So she would say something like, the policeman would say, "Ma'am, you know that you were speeding." And she would say, officer, there was someone who just, he flashed me, and I couldn't help it. I just had to get away." And if the officer didn't believe her, she would say to him, "You know what? All you policemen are just criminals from a past life making up for your bad karma." And so
I had
a woman who was bigger than life who was showing me this way to speak with spirits through symbols and through the cards and through messages, and help me develop my intuition. And then the last thing that I give credit to is something that most people might not see the connection, but for me it's quite strong, and that is that I was raised Christian Scientist. And we are the ones, I always tell people, we're the ones that don't believe in doctors. We're not the one that Tom Cruise is with. So I was raised to believe that I could, with my belief, with my mind, change anything. I could put my hand through a solid table. I could heal myself of sickness, of mind, body, or spirit. All I needed to do was remember that I am the divine light. And with that understanding, with that complete knowledge that I am solely made up of light and love from a divine source that we all have access to, like a ray of light from the sun itself, if I could remember that, anything was possible for me, absolutely anything. And to me, that is the foundation of magic.
Mm-hmm. And how does one transition from being a Christian to being a pagan witch?
Well, we are a witch. Christian. Yeah. Yeah. I do identify as witch. Yes. You know what? I think it was all that combination. My mother is Mexican, and so going to church, I loved the ritual. I loved the incense. I loved all of that. But I felt it too constricting. I felt the Christian Scientist was too constricting. All these things were constricting. And the one thing that kept calling me forward was nature. The one teacher that was imploring me to walk barefoot, to hug trees, to, you know, attract, to go to vortexes and Sedona and find the highest peaks and feel myself connected to it. That was the only religion that made sense to me. Was a religion that followed the cycles of nature. So it was also a moment when, after I graduated from college and I tried to go into the field of study, which was marketing and public relations, and I didn't do good because I would wear patchouli to work or too many rings or a pink boa or something funky, like some broom skirt when I was supposed to be wearing a tweed skirt or something like that. So when I left that all, I went into massage therapy. I went into the healing arts. And while I was there, I met a woman who held sabbats. And so I was able to begin going to ceremonies and appreciating and understanding the mandala of nature and what it means to be a witch for a year and a day before you claim it, before you own it. You know, you're still in the process of learning it and accepting it. It's like saying that you're fluent just because you can say como te amo. You know, it's
right.
So I had a lot of really good and gentle teachers, and my first teachers were studying in Fae, and so I kept finding the mentors and the teachers, and my next teacher was Greek, and so every teacher that I found coincided with the pantheon and with the specific traditions that were had already intrigued me. And then the teacher would, you know, it was when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. That's what happened for me.
No wonder your book is so complete and so filled with so many different cultures and all the mythology from the world. But I don't want to jump ahead of time because we're going to talk about the book at length a little bit later. But I have to put you through my joke. I'm sorry, but I always say this joke to whoever listens, and I have to put you through it. When people ask me, you know, like about Mexico and magic, and I say, well, you know, Mexico is the most pagan country in the world. Don't tell the Mexicans. They think they're Catholic.
<I'm kidding. laughs> Exactly. Oh, my mom used to tell me she was raised. She went to a Catholic high school, and she said she couldn't decide if she wanted to be a witch or a nun because both had power.
Right? The fact that I, you know, remember in that the games that we play as kids, you know, like kids here, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know, each generation does their thing, but you know how kids are eating Tide Pods here in the United States. In Mexico, we kids will be playing Let's Summon the Spirit, you know, at school with a book and the thread and the scissors. That was the game that we were playing, like Let's Summon the Spirit and let's do some divination. That was the game that we were playing on high school, you know.
So, oh, my God.
Yeah, Mexico is like that. And people don't believe me. And then I also have people say, like, oh, okay, so every Mexican is a healer? Kinda. You know, because it's so deep into our culture that, yeah, a lot of us know a thing or two about a thing or two. I think every human in its own right has some kind of knowledge about nature and healing. And quoting the great Scott Cunningham, you know, magic is her birthright, so everybody has some kind of use of magic and knowledge and power. Speaking of Cunningham, who inspires me? Who inspires you? Who inspires you to be the powerful, amazing, powerful witch that you are?
Well, I have to say Cunningham was also a really big influence, especially when I was writing the Wicca herbal, and, you know, to really dive into the ritual use of herbs. And I just found it so fascinating how so often an herb's healing properties really is like very synonymous with their magical properties. And I felt mm-hmm. like the work that he had done was really about a conscious connection with the sentient knowledge and the sentient awareness of the plants themselves, and introduced that idea that we can't anthropomorphize plants, like, you know, it's a Disney film or something, and we're going to say, oh, the fairy of basil looks like this, and her skirt is going to be full of basil skirts. You know, they have their own way of doing things, their own life, their own way of communicating. So I felt that that was really humbling in a really good way, and really put human beings like on the same, and man and woman on the same equal playing level as the plants and the trees and the stars. So that was really important to me. Another modern witch, the one that comes straight to mind, is Starhawk. And the reason I appreciate her so much is, first, just bringing the goddess traditions in a historical way. And as a double Capricorn, I really like a strong foundation. And I like something that's steeped in this lineage. And I don't like to use the word history. I would say herstory, or you know, themstory, if we would use that word even. But I find that that was really important, but I also really appreciate the fact that she organizes and helps people understand what civil disobedience is and permaculture. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the reason mm-hmm. I wrote the Wicca Cookbook the way I did it, the first book that came out in 2000, was because I would go to pagan sabbats and I would be so surprised that people would be bringing Kentucky Fried Chicken. I could not wrap my head mm-hmm. around, why aren't we bringing seasonal food? Why aren't we, if we say we're an earth spirituality and a nature spirituality, then why aren't we really, you know, right in there with the farmers? And I'm not saying that there aren't people who do that. It was just my experience that I was having. And so to bring this earth spirituality into a concept like permaculture, where you're working with the land and you're creating pathways for water to move, and you are bringing out the natural beauty, whereas, you know, you look at some landscapes or different places and it's lipstick on a pig, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you look at a place that's permaculture, where the natural flow of the land is utilized for a production yield, or perhaps beauty, or a little bit of both. So I appreciate that concrete pagan experience in the mainstream world.
Mm-hmm. And she's been at it for a long, long time. And, you know, she's not only talking the talk, but she's also walking the walk and big time. And she mm-hmm. is truly a figure of inspiration. I agree with you. You know, sometimes you go to these pagan events and forget the fried chicken. All the disposable styrofoam plates and cups and whatever happens, to bring your own plate, and you know, like, oh yeah, yes. We are one with nature, but let us produce all this garbage that she don't need. Like, no, let's not do that.
Exactly, you know? And that's another reason that my other art form became pottery. That I'm also mm-hmm. I also make my own earthenware, because that same idea of working with, you know, working with nature to create functional art, to have that combination of beauty and functionality, something that's come from your own hands. And it's a perfect tool for me, because it helps me understand, or it's a perfect hobby for me because it helps me understand the beauty of my imperfection. And mm-hmm. That's a big, big life lesson for me.
Yeah. And we all do little things that are not, you know, perfect, but that's the point, that we understand that we all have room for improvement. What we were talking about when we were doing the pre-interview, that somebody was saying about being a finished product. I don't know if you remember, we went into that tangent, that we never are a finished product. We are always a work in progress. And that's the idea, that nobody's going to come to save you. There's no angel, God, goddess, elemental, or spirit on a cloud that is going to come and go, poof, now you're saved. That we have to do the work and, you know, the self-work and the self-conscious working on your own power and your own magic. Why is not everybody seeing magic like that, Jamie?
You know what? I feel like it's kind of like there was a lot. There was a line in Harry Potter where he asked Hagrid, why don't the Muggles know about magic? And Hagrid said something to the effect of they would want to use magic to make every problem go away. They would use it as a quick fix. And I feel like that's kind of been the perpetuating idea that's been put forth by media, whether it's books of fiction and even some, you know, other spell books and different things that are put out there that you can do this little thing and boom, it's going to go away. You know, I was taught by my high priestess that there are four questions that you must ask yourself before you do any spell work at all. And the first one is, do you really need it? Is this something that is that important that you need to call upon the forces of the four directions and the gods and the you know, Mother Earth and Father Sky and gods and goddesses? Are you prepared to call them forward to help you? Is it a need? Have you done everything in your power to bring about this change that you want? If you want to be a dancer, are you in dance class, or are you just thinking that you can cast a spell on the right day using the right herbs and the right moon phase and it's all going to come together? Like, no, that's not going to happen. And don't think for a second that it will. And so there was, and then will you harm anybody? That's another aspect, another thing that I think is told where if it's okay to cast spells on another person. I mean, I had a dear friend of mine was very ill at one point, and believe me, I wanted to call in everybody to change that direction, to make her well again, but it wasn't my path and it wasn't my choice to make. And so you could only ask, may I pray on your behalf? May I light a candle on your behalf? But you can never take over somebody's will or think that you know better, because we don't have that full picture. And then the last question that I don't think people ask themselves these days is, are you willing to accept the responsibilities of the results? Because once you put those forces into motion, the way it's going to show up is much different than what you might imagine. And you need to be willing to accept that responsibility. And I don't know that that we're even often teaching our children that anymore. You know, when we placate them, and what was it I read somewhere the other day? It says we don't prepare the children for the road of life. We try to prepare the road of life for our children. And we can't do that. We can't do that. And like you said earlier, trying to save somebody from becoming a more manifested light on this earth is not why we are here. You know, there will be struggle, but in between, there are going to be days of contentment and days of happiness. And those are the ones, that's what we need to hold on to and not worry about it. You know, will this last? Well, of course it's not going to last. Nothing's going to last. Yep. So raise your glass of wine or champagne or cider or whatever, water, and toast the joy that you feel that day. I mean, I think that's really why we say to live in this moment. And that's what, to me, magic is about. And for me, the other beauty of what happened with magic was the healing that it brought for me. I was very mired in a lot of sadness when I first, in my teen years. And after the cookbook did so well, I was asked to do a book called the Teen Spell Book. And that meant going through my diary and rereading through the pain and rereading through different points where I didn't feel loved. And, you know, to write that was blasphemy against the Blessed Mother. Whenever my mom found my diary, she would say, what do you mean? It's something I think you can understand when you come from a Mexican culture. Like, you're not allowed to say anything about the Blessed Mother, you know, not even in your diary, And so it was a matter of not feeling heard. And so I used I asked magic for guidance. You know, what is the herb that'll help me change my perspective, that'll help me see this from a different point of view? What is the crystal that'll move the energy? Who's the goddess that will guide me through this labyrinth? And that's what magic is intended to do in my mind. And you said a great quote the other day, and I don't want to misquote you. Can you tell me your quote about magic and consciousness? Because it's my favorite. You said that the other day.
Yeah. It's not mine, and I cannot remember who said it now because, of course, I'm on the spot. Magic is the ability to change your consciousness at will. So the phrase is, magic is the ability to change your consciousness at will. And my mentor adds at the end, and your will consciously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's nothing more. I'm a science person, you know. I like science.
Uh-huh.
I like to back up everything with science. And actually, my mentor, Christian Ortiz, who's been my mentor, and now we're colleagues, of course, but he's been my mentor for 12 years. And he says to me, colleague, you are too serious to be esoteric and too mystical to be serious, because I'm always looking for the science behind the thing, but I, at the same time, have this humongous faith. And so this phrase to me grounds it and brings the science part into it, because it's all about changing your mind, in my opinion, of course. Magic, the hardest part of magic is changing your mind. And that's why I always joke around that and nothing against the people who wrote The Secret, but the secret of The Secret is that there's no secret. You have to change your mind, period. That's step one. But, Jamie, and this is the one thing that you and I were talking that we so wholeheartedly agree, you cannot just stop at changing your mind. You have to bring action into it. I want to be the best dancer in the world. Are you taking dancing classes? Oh, I want a best job where I'm appreciated. Are you applying? Have you dusted off your resume? Have you knocked some doors? You know, and that in and of itself is an act of magic. So magic is not only when I raise a circle and I'm chanting in the middle of a ritual, but magic is when I'm cooking and I'm grabbing the right ingredients for me to be healthy. So
yes.
Magic to me, and being a witch and being a priestess, is not a 9-to-5 that after I'm done with ritual, I take off the magic part of me and I hang it with my cape or my soul, you know. Like, I'm a witch 24/7 and I'm a priestess 24/7, and as such, magic permeates everything you do. And the very traditional way of Mexicans making your little phrases and your little sayings, that's when I came up with that, you're a witch, act like one, because that's a 24/7. That's gonna go in my grave.
Yeah.
You're a witch,
yeah,
act like
that.
One.
I love that. But it's so true, because I think it's also when you get into that flow, like you're talking about cooking, right? And, you know, I'm sure anyone who's kind of had a good time in the kitchen and kind of maybe put on the music and danced a little bit, or just kind of, you go in the flow. And you're in that positive, they call it now, for your science-minded ones, the positive psychology. There really is that thing called the flow, right? And it's when you lose track of time. It's something you're already good at, but you drop into the spontaneity of it. And in that moment, your hand reaches for the right herb. It reaches for the right ingredients, for the right salt, because everything at that point is beginning to conspire to work with you. And when you're in that flow of people would, to me, that is the magic. And that is also the confidence of knowing that you belong there. Because I think that's a lot of things that people struggle with, is this idea of, am I really allowed to be there? Can I really do it? Well, you know, and I remember when I first started, like, well, I don't have, you know, a yellow candle, but I have a white candle. You know, and it's like, well, in your mind. Your mind, you can see that candle. If that candle was supposed to represent courage, that can be courage. You could write a sigil and you could carve a sigil in there in your candle, and it is courage. You get to change it with your consciousness, with your will, with your mind.
And I am totally one of those witches that, because they say, you know, society has this tendency of categorize and label everything, which is disgusting. I believe the only labels that are useful are the ones that say salt and sugar. Any other label should be done away with.
Because it is good to know the difference between those two.
I think they're the only ones that is necessary. You know, everything else, people redefine themselves as kaleidoscopes. You know, you redefine yourself as you go. Today, right now, I'm a broadcaster. Tomorrow, I'm going to be cooking and be a witch. But the idea is that I forgot what I was going to say now because I started talking about labels. But, I was going to tell you. They categorize us into, are you a witch of intent or are you a witch of ritual? I have heard that, Jamie. And
have
I'm
you?
One of those witches. Yes, that's a new one. Like, so are you one of those witches that says everything is about intention, or are you actually a ritualistic witch? As if one should cancel the other, which I think sometimes something calls for a ritual and the whole shebang, and you know, everything, colors, numbers, correspondences, the candle, the bell, the this, mm-hmm. that, and that there are times where you could be sitting in the middle of traffic and just say, my will is so and so let it be, and you know, snap your fingers and so goes the magic. I believe in both ways, but by that category that people are using, I am an intention witch. You know, I believe that intention mm-hmm. is everything. And in that being said, I believe that, you can change the thing. You can change a candle from being white to be yellow because that's your intention. And that's where the magic is born. The magic is born in your intent or your mind. If you don't have it in your mind, then if you cannot see it, if you cannot visualize it, then you're not going to be able to make it happen.
Well, you know, that's one of the things my high priestess used to say to me. She said, all these tools, your candles, your bells, your athame, your spoons, whatever it is, your drums, whatever it is, that is a symbol of what exists inside of you. And you need to know that you can be on a desert island and do magic.
Mm-hmm.
You call up that drum by holding onto your heartbeat, right? You
mm-hmm.
hold that spoon that is your sacred spoon intended to feed water or whatnot to plants, and you cup your hands. You become that tool. You become that magic. And that is
mm-hmm.
what all these tools around us are for. And I think
mm-hmm.
for me, when it's time for ritual, it's because I can't wrap my mind around it. So I need my visual 3D. You know, that's what it is to
mm-hmm.
me. Like when people go, well, what is a spell? I said, well, it's casting your word. And if I need to speak a little bit more mainstream, I'll say it's a prayer in 3D.
There you go.
You know, that's what it is. Like we've taken that same prayer, but we light the candle, we burn the incense, we ring the bells, we sprinkle the salt. And these are all representations of the elements that live within us, you know, air, our breath, water, our blood.
Yes.
This is who we are. And these are our tools to remind us of the magic and the power that lives within us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. By the way, I went to Google and I Googled very quickly that phrase, and it's attributed to Beyond Fortune. And it goes, magic is the art of changing consciousness according to will. And
okay.
I've just been butchering it my whole life. But anyway, it is what it is. I guess I made it my own.
You're
now.
Making it your own. You're making it your own, Laura.
but I like to give credit where it's due. So it's attributed to the
unfortunate.
And Jamie, I'm freezing, so I need a cup of coffee. Why don't I leave you with a little bit of music and we come back and then we're going to go 2 feet forward, plunging in the book of spells, The Magic of Witchcraft. I love this book from the cover, from the color, from the smell, from the lettering, from everything, all the design. I'm smelling the book. It just smells so, oh my God, it's made with so much love. We're going to talk about the book, but I want to leave you with this beautiful song by Wendy Rule that is called The Ascent. And we'll be back with one here on Lunatic Mondays. So don't go anywhere, anybody. Stay put. And I'll leave you here. This is The Ascent with Wendy Rowe. We'll be back with more here on Lunatic Mondays.
Darkness and six for the light.
And we're back here live on Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, with Laura Gonzalez, yours truly. That was Wendy Rule and the song The Ascent from her new album, Persephone. And I just want to give a shout out very quickly. Wendy Rule is going to be here in Chicago on February 8th at the Winter Tribal Stump 2020, Dark Goddess Rising. And tickets for her workshop are on sale already. She's going to be doing a workshop from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. It's going to be amazing because she's going to take us on a journey through the underworld with Persephone. And then, of course, she's going to be performing later at 8:30, you know, her beautiful art, her beautiful music. But it's going to be a whole day event, and there's going to be all kinds of dancing and vendors. And, of course, yours truly will be doing tarot readings at Ojo de Fortuna. This is going to happen on February 8th from 1 p.m. until midnight. All of the list of the events and the tickets and everything you can find at www.travelstumpchicago.com/winter2020, or just go to travelstumpchicago, and then you're going to find all the information there as well. And also to let you know about February events, February shows here on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. We have, of course, Nature Mystic and Nature Spirituality with Selena Fox. We have Moon Magic with David and Janet Ewan. We have Circle Talk with Deborah Rose. And we have Lunes Lunaticos, Lunatic Mondays with yours truly, Laura Gonzalez. And we also have Paganos del Mundo, our other bilingual show, produced by yours truly on Spanish and Portuguese on Saturdays. And we're going to have on the month of February, Cristian Ortiz, Carolina Amor, Laura Gonzalez, and Patricia Sinclair bringing you shows. I'm lying. Cristian Ortiz, Carolina Amor, Harwit Tuileva, and Patricia Sinclair bringing you shows in Spanish and Portuguese on February. So don't miss those. And for us, Lunatic Mondays, we're going to have an interview on February 10th with Gregory Michael Brewer, author of The Ancient Magic of Trees. He's going to be talking about his book on February 10th. And on February 24th, we have the founder of the Buckland Museum in Ohio, Tony Rotonda. She's going to be talking to us on February 24th. On February 3rd, for those who speak Spanish, we're going to have the presence of Cielo y Tierra with Pedro Badar and Eva DeVos. They're going to be talking about their music, their inspiration, and the magic and healing of music all over the world. And speaking of magic, we're back here with Jamie Delight. Jamie, how are you, honey?
I'm doing awesome. Just I went and found Wendy Rule on Instagram and just tagged her. Like, your song is amazing.
Isn't it? The whole album, the whole Persephone. The album is beautiful. The art in the album is beautiful. She was with us on January 13th, like a month ago, on Lunatic Mondays. And no, I'm lying. That was 2 weeks ago. Jesus. I live, you know, I'm already in February. So I'm thinking that January was a month ago. And no, January is today. And I'm just,
you're working too much. Your magic on the time zones.
I really am a time traveler. I am not lying, because I do, for real, I'm booking already March events. So my mind is already on February. And no, this is January 27th, Laura. Relax. you know, it's a little too much. Anyway, Jamie, I wanted to ask you, of course, about this baby, your newest baby, your youngest baby.
Yeah.
The Book of Spells, The Magic of Witchcraft. This is your eighth or your ninth?
You know what? It depends on if you count. Sometimes I count. I feel like counting, like I'm counting my generations in California. It's like, am I 10th or 9th? I guess it depends if you count. Because the cookbook had two editions. This seems like a different book for me, because it was originally born as the teen spell book in 2001, and then it's been revised. So I do believe this is my eighth book, though. Yeah.
And
it's my newest baby, like you said.
Yeah. How has this baby been born? It truly feels like it's an ideal book for someone that just starting, but also for Season Witches, it has a lot of reminders and a lot of little things that I as I've been browsing through the book, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot that. So,
right.
You know, I found it's so useful. It's so beautiful. Tell us about how you got inspired to do it.
Okay, well, it begins in its original rendition, so as the teen spell book. So essentially, the Book of Spells the Wicked Cookbook came out in October of 2000, and it sold out of its first print run within a couple months. So the publisher was super jazzed, and she called me and she said, hey, we'd really like you to write a book for teens. They're just getting into this right now. Do you think you can do that? And I thought to myself, I don't want to, because that meant I was going to have to go back to my teen years, back to what that pain that I had been carrying around. I was also, when the book was first coming out, I was in my Saturn's return. So it was time to let some stuff go. It was time to let a foundation of pain be gone. I was listening to a lot of Jagged Little Pill by Alanis Morissette. And her raw and tender lyrics about how futile and painful it is to try for perfection, the indignations that women put up with, just trying to love themselves, and how difficult that can be in this world. And it really spoke to the pain that I was in and experiencing. But when given this opportunity, honestly, to be paid for my own therapy, I thought, well, how can I say no? this is perfect. My sons were, 2 and 4 years old, and I didn't want to pass on any of this anger that I was holding on to. Like I said, I had a hard time with my mom, and my father had left when I was very young, and so she had, was having a difficult time just raising teen daughters, and so. But I carried it on, and I made the stories my own, and I added to them, and so the book itself became an opportunity to let it go. And so I wrote it in a way, because I thought of it like a cookbook. I think of spell books, the best spell books are like cookbooks, or like the best cookbooks, where you get an idea of your theme, what this is about. This is about empowerment. People have been writing that my books are like self-help books disguised as magic books. And I thought, oh, good. You see, you get where I'm going to then,
You get what magic is now. Good for you.
You get what magic is now. Yay. I'm so happy. So for me, it was really a matter of, let's show you all the ingredients, right? These are the magical correspondents. This is the herbs. These are the numbers. This is the tarot. This is the what animals can represent. These are the different gods and goddesses that can assist you. And here's kind of your toolbox, as it were. I don't want to make it sound like we're using gods and goddesses, because I know that is a phrase that really upsets people. So I want to kind of, I don't mean to be using them. I'm saying we invite them to help us, just like we would invite a number, just like we would invite an herb, or, you do need to establish a relationship with different herbs and with different crystals, and you don't just kind of call them all on and say, "All come help me." It's part of the magic where you make that relationship with them. Like you take your step forward to taking the dance classes or applying for jobs. You step into relationship with these magical correspondences. So I felt like that was the first thing. That was why it was ordered the way it was. That's why in the beginning there's information about one way to cast a circle, the 4 questions that I had mentioned earlier, how important those are to be in your integrity and in respect for the power that is magic. And then I had gone through my diary, essentially, from when I was 11 to 14, and I wrote down every time that I didn't feel connected to my own divinity, to my own lovability, to my original innocence, and my ability to co-create with the divine. And I essentially created affirmations, visualizations, prayers in 3D, rituals, ceremony to change my perspective, to change my consciousness, to change my will, to change my mind, to see the teasing, the apathy, the depression, the, desire to get a job, the desire to get money, the desire to have a friend, the need to break up peacefully, all these different things that I didn't know how to do. I implored magic to help me transition and above the mundane of this, and to see it from a spiritual perspective, and then bring that magic down into earth and to live it and to step it and to be into action with it. So 18 years later, a full adult life, you know, as we call it here in America, 18 years, the publisher came back and said, hey, can you rewrite this book? And I thought, wow, that is amazing. Okay. And what I did is I cut approximately 30 spells from the original book. And those were spells that I felt were either very specific to a teen life or were a little superfluous and maybe not focused enough on self-empowerment. Because like you said, we're always a work in project. Well, so is our artwork. So is, you know, anything we do. Sometimes it's due and sometimes you just need to get it done or turn it in and have it printed or published or out in the world in some way, a song, whatever it is. But you're probably always tweaking with it. We hear musicians all the time redoing their own songs and giving it a different tone, you know? So that's what I got an opportunity to do. And then I added 8 new spells that I had learned the wisdom of in the last 18 years, like Blessing Youthful Innocence or Owning Your Own Starshine, or the one that's really kind of fun that I'm working with right now, which is Increasing Your Bliss Tolerance. And, you know, it was funny because my editor was like, are you sure that's the word you want to use? I'm like, yeah, I think a lot of us think we have a finite amount of bliss that we can take in before the other shoe's going to drop. And when things get too good or whatever it is, we start looking for the, you know, whatever to hit the fan. And if we can actually just increase our bliss tolerance and allow for more joy and more happiness and more innocence and more lightheartedness and more curiosity about the world, rather than thinking we know it all and when it's going to fall apart, you know, that's magic. That's incredible magic, to allow that childlike mind of wonder to be part of who we are as adults.
You're never gonna believe this, but yeah, I know you don't. I was talking to the people at the market yesterday. Yesterday we have our monthly Bruja market at the Ojo de Fortuna, and we do a little opening and closing acknowledge of, you know, wealth, abundance, and the medicine that we carry for the people and this and that. And as part of the closing acknowledgement, we were talking about childlike behavior and the ability to be awed and curious and have the ability to learn something new and to be surprised by life, you know? I think the worst, one of the really bad things that we do as humans is think that we know it all and that we shouldn't be learning anymore. And I love how young people are like, we have so much to teach y'all, old people. And, you know, I listen to them, and I'm actually working with a 16-year-old right now. We're going to do a workshop together. And I am I am nervous. I am nervous because I don't know how that's going to work. And it will put to test my ability to share and to be flexible. And me being the controlling witch that I am. So, new experiences. And I love that you have this bliss, increase your bliss tolerance. The one that I was looking at earlier is forgiving someone. And I love the little rhyme and the rhyme that you put here. If I may read it. Yeah. Is that okay with you? If I read it a little bit? Okay.
Yeah.
I forgive and release, embracing harmony and peace. From the pain, I am free to live my life weightlessly. Those simple, quote unquote, words that when you say them from your heart, it's such a powerful statement. And to say, you know what, I have come to the realization that I'm going to forgive you, not because you probably deserve to be forgiven or not, that is something you'll have to deal with God. But because I want to be weightlessly, I don't want the weight of my anger for you to bring me down. Mm-hmm. I I love everything about the book. I love the smell. I love the little rhymes and spells and everything. I love how much you have at the beginning on the chapter of the craft, with crystals, with the moon, with the four directions, with the tarot, with the runes that I have never been able to learn because I just don't make for that. The chakras, the animals. I mean, this is a very complete book. And I promise you, when we did the pre-interview, I promised that I was going to ask you, because if I ever write a book, I want this hardcover and a very cool design on it, like yours. How is the process, besides the amazing inspirational process that you already shared with us on writing your book, the content, but what is the process of actually publishing? Because I'm so afraid of adventure in it, and everybody keeps telling me I should. let's not go into that.
How is the process? Funny because, well, the process, my process is going to be a lot different than other people's because, but not necessarily, because it was the magic that drew it. So essentially what happened was, like I said, when I realized I wasn't living my life in a corporate environment and I quit to become a massage therapist, I was looking for other jobs while I built up my business and our clientele, and I found a job ad looking for a literary agent's assistant. And I was, at the time, I was writing magazine articles. I really wanted to write always about, remind children of the innocence that we had. So I wanted to write like esoteric, mystical fables that would be in like Highlights magazine and kids would read it in the dentist office. Like, this was like as far as I dreamed in the late or mid 90s. So I applied and I started working for a literary agent, and I was her assistant. And after a few years of reading manuscripts and realizing, like, understanding the business from the inside, reading proposals and query letters and whatnot, an editor came to the agent and said, "I want somebody. Do you have a writer? Do you know anyone who could write a book called The Wicca Cookbook?" And my agent said, "Yes, my assistant can do that." And so I actually got a book contract without ever having, like, the first books, all the books that I've written have always been under contract, which I write fiction as well, but because I've never been paid for that, I haven't finished one entirely. So that is how I became a published author, is working in a literary agency as the boss's assistant. And then, but for the most part, you write a proposal, and I can help you with that, Laura. You write a proposal and then you go searching for agents on a website called Publishers Marketplace, and you find the agents who are buying and interested in books similar to the ones that you are writing and want to write. And then you pitch them, and then you do the same thing and you look for editors who are interested. And then you also, because the way the industry works now is they want to know that you have an audience, which you do, you have a podcast, and whether or not you start writing articles and submitting them to other publications so that people start to see your name outside of the people that you just know. And then in terms of the cover, you know, it's one of those things, you don't get to choose your cover. You get to influence your cover. So what happened for me is the publisher created a cover, and it had a font that, Laura, it reminded me of like the Knights of Templar or something. It was so Christian and so freaky looking. I told her, I'm like, "I will not write this book. You must change." I fell on my sword for that one. I don't often, because you need to choose your battles, but I said no. And it had this image of a rose, but more thorns than flowers. And I thought, this is what people think magic is, but this is not what my magic is. This is not the magic that I represent or do. The magic I represent and do is about healing and growing and learning and expanding and stepping into connection with all of life in a very respectful way. And so what I did is I sent the graphic designer a sculpture called Expansion by Paige Bradley. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful sculpture of a woman sitting in a seated position with beams of light, cracks and then beams of light shining out. And the phrase, ring the bells that still can ring, forget your perfect offering, there is a crack in everything, that's how the light gets in. And when I sent her these two things, she created a book that was in the image and likeness of this sculpture called Expansion, with this woman's heart open, her hands out, and these lights shining through the parts of her that may have one day been broken or at one point in her life bed dark and are now completely immersed in glimmering light.
True poetry. True poetry.
So,
wow.
So it's a tenacity. It's a yearning and a desire and a, you know, to put yourself out there and to experience the rejection that comes when you submit your work sometimes, or when they edit it out, you know, and they make some edits that make it good and some edits that edit your voice and your heart out of it. And you have to say, no, I'm going to stand up for this part. And you just, it's a matter of maturity and learning when they're saying something that's going to help people understand and reach more people. And that's important. And then when they've changed the voice or changed the tone or changed the message, and that's when it becomes not okay. But being very clear, just like our magic, being very, very, very clear about the focus and stepping
mm-hmm.
forward fearlessly and knowing that there is already a place out there, there's already an editor who wants to read your book.
Right? And,
yes.
You know, for
by my will,
so
let it
that...
be, right?
You know, honestly, I mean, this is not the Laura Gonzalez show, though it is the Laura Gonzalez show, but it's not about Laura. I always tell people, like, why would you want me to write a book? There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of podcasts. And every time I interview somebody, I put my two cents. So you can hear me and you can hear my opinions. You can hear what I, you know, how I teach and all that. And they're like, nope, we want your book. It's really hard for me. It's hard for me to write in English, you know. And I'm a oral tradition person. So, you know, in Mexico is such big culture to have the oral tradition. The teachers teach orally. There's no notes taken. There's nothing about like writing stuff from the ancient people. So I guess that's the story I've told myself, that's why I just do podcasts. But if I ever get to do a book, I will be hitting you up. Girlfriend.
Yes, and you better.
I don't know.
I was just looking at a picture of all my books, and there are 9. I'm so bad. I feel like, how silly of me. I'm like the mother in the shoe with all her babies. I'm like, I don't know. Do I have 8 or 9? Like,
yeah.
I forgot.
They're there. They're there.
They're there. I feed them.
Speaking of all your 9 children, I knew this was going to happen. I knew we were going to have so much fun that we were going to go over. And we have indeed gone over. But I don't want to leave you without asking you, A, what's next for you? B, you got to talk about the Target thing. And C, where can one buy your... So,
okay,
take it over.
So what's next for me is, also the other thing is, I know we wanted to say, is my books were originally published under Jamie Wood, and I changed my last name to Jamie Della because I had carried the surname of 4 males, my biological father, my grandfather, my stepfather, my husband, and now that all of them have moved on out of my life, some to the other side, some just to the other side. I changed it to Jamie Della because Della means of the. It was my grandmother's name, and I could have been Della Luna, Della Tierra, Della Montañas, and I decided that I just wanted to be ever evolving, just like the goddess. The name reminds me of the goddess that I am, and I like the fact that it ends on an up note, and there are so many different ways that I can see myself, and that is very important that I remind myself in however many ways possible that I am a diamond with many, many facets. So what's up for me next is I am working on a memoir, and it's going to go into, it's about belonging, and it's about my California ancestors and the Spanish Rancho period, and it's going to be magical realism where I dream my family into being so that I can show what life had been like in California in the 1800s, and then before with some of the native blood and native experiences that I have. So that's what's next. I'm super excited about that. Sometimes I write a lot of essays, and I'm working on getting those published, and that's a lot of fun. And then the exciting part is Target is going to start carrying the Book of Spells in 1,145 stores beginning in March. So I'm so excited that I have reached the mainstream with magic. Oh, my gosh, so thrilled. I can't wait. My joy, my dream is to go into a Target. And, of course, I'm going to scream and yell. I'm going to scare everyone nearby me, and that's okay. And then I will take pictures with people, random people, strangers, poor strangers. I feel sorry for you already. I'm going to hug you. I used to have a 3-year-old best friend when I was 3, and she was 3. And she used to cry when she saw me because I gave too big of bear hugs. So, but in any case, and then I'm going to skip to the front, and I'm going to buy the book, and I'm going to assign it to a checker or to a guest or to somebody and hand that book over. And I want to do that as many times as possible. I'm so excited. And then where my books can be, you can buy my books on IndieBound. It's an independent bookseller online, on Barnes & Noble online and in their stores, and Amazon. It's also available on Amazon and independent bookstores, magic shops. One of the great things would be going into a shop, and if they don't have it, even ordering it, because that really, really helps an author when a new bookstore finds out about the book and can sell it right away. Then they might get another copy, and then it builds in that way. That's a little bit stronger of a bookselling community than some of the other methods. But however you get it, I'd love it. I'm on jamiedella.com. You can also message me if people are interested in signed copies. We can work something out that way. And I'm going to be on a Northern California book tour. I'm going to be in San Rafael on this Saturday, February 1st. I'm going to be at Gathering Time doing a Writing Down the Magic workshop. It's a writing and ritual combination, writing workshop and ritual. And on February 5th, I'll be at Books, Inc. in Berkeley. And on February 6th, I will be in Sebastopol at Many Rivers Books and Tea. So I'm looking forward to this hitting the road, and my wanderlust will be happy with that. And thank you so much for having me. I just love chatting with you, love being able to share magic, love to speak the language of our tradition, the language of our spirituality, with someone who shares a lot of my same sentiments.
Yeah. I'm in awe of how, again, Selena, with her infinite wisdom, so selfish. She's like, no, you better go with Laura. Because she knew we were going to be causing some ruckus. And I also now I understand why you're in California and I'm in Chicago. Because I will be alongside with you on Target going like, oh, my God, you know? So, yeah, that's why we're so far.
Yes.
Society couldn't take us together, Jamie. That's what happened.
I'd be like, oh, my God. But believe me, if ever I'm in Chicago, I'm looking you up.
You better. You better not come to Chicago and not come to see me. Mírala. Well, sister. Oh my God, this has been so much fun as I knew it was going to be. Thank you so much to everyone. Of course, thank you to our audience who's listening now. Remember, you can listen to us here on Blog Talk Radio. You can also listen to us on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, iBox, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a myriad of podcast platforms. And as far as I know, we have been reproduced on a whole bunch of them. There are over 200 hours of CSM podcasts already, and we haven't even been a year old. We're not even a year old yet, and there is over 200 hours. And, of course, we want you to please tell everybody about this podcast, whether you listen live or you listen later, whether you download and listen at home. Keep it for your archives. Keep it for you. Please help us share the word. We are a baby, baby station. We just started, like I said, not even a year ago. And we would like to hear from you also on suggestions. What do you want to hear, whether in Lunatic Mondays or any of the other shows? Jamie, it's been a pleasure to have you. I have so much fun. This is why I do what I do, because I have so much fun and I learn so much from our guests. And I thank you for, you know, taking the time to be here with us tonight, and obviously look forward to have you again when the new babies arrived. And I'll leave the microphone for you to say goodnight to your audience.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everyone, and I will see you all tonight, later, next week, next month, whenever you tune in again, I'll be here. And we're going to say goodnight tonight with Wendy Rule and Creator Destroyer. Remember, Wendy Rule is Chicago, February 8th. And until then, never forget that you are loved. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
From the depths of the forest, she will find you. She will drag you up and call you into being. She will lay her naked body on the debris. She will howl until her spirit overruns the city. She will rise up through the cracks between the pavements. She will buckle train lines, bridges all collapsing. And the powers of the mighty become frail. Her belly to devour.
Destroyer, oh, Monday.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting to the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.